I am Isander.
And I'm Coda.
And thank you for tuning into this episode on the Sisters of Battle. I'm going to be honest, just from the beginning, this one isn't a faction that's going to appeal to you, Coda, a bunch.
No.
Just because of the aesthetics they play into, but they're awesome. But they're so cool. They will appeal to seven. You are the 10th dentist.
I'm the 10th dentist?
You are the 10th dentist.
I've seen a little bit of Sisters of Battle art just from like the stuff that I've... The images I've needed to pull up for previous videos, and they are giving very much so, like, nuns with guns.
I was going to go the whole episode without saying, I want the record to show every time one of these obvious puns appears, I'm never the one to make it. I always leave the low-hanging fruit where it is.
It's because I love the puns. I'm more of, like, a technology guy. That's why you see me repping the Mechanicus and the Necrons. I think those guys are cool. But, yeah, the whole... Oh, God Emperor is not my
thing. Oh, no, they're fantastic. 40K is full of villains. It's known. It's the grim darkness of the 41st, second, maybe millennium. Everyone is, they're usually ideas taken to their logical extreme. For example, the last episode is the Mechanicus. It's what happens if you leave your engineers alone for too long. It makes sense, but it's so out of the realm of possible. It's the worst this idea could possibly go. The sisters are the embodiment of the most extreme religious fanaticism. And it's not just willing to be martyred. I mean, you and I could get martyred tomorrow if we wanted to. Don't. This is not me telling you to martyr yourself. Let me be very clear. Life is fantastic. It's a weird and fun ride. Stay on it for as long as it lets you.
All of the cool kids are staying alive.
All the cool kids aren't martyring themselves.
All the cool kids aren't martyring themselves. Yes.
The sisters take it to a different level. Martyring for a sister is... It's common. It just happens on the tabletop. I don't know if they still do because I haven't read the most recent edition, but they used to have rules where when one of them died, they got stronger for it. So some of them did. Martyring is nothing to the sisters. They arrive in combat with tanks that have pipe organs built into them.
Okay, I like that.
And the pipes, I suppose, what you'd call them, are double as missile launchers too. So they're playing hymnals on there as they're firing missile after missile after missile with each note.
Okay, that's just badass.
And it's javelin style too. So you can fire javelins straight if you want, but most javelins, you fire them and then they go up and then slam down really aggressively. So it's just, there's just a sister playing church hymnals as missiles are just raining down from there.
That's just cool that's like giving really cool rock and roll like concert.
Oh, this isn't even half of it. They are blasting hymns from everything they have in combat. If the Sisters of Battle are in combat, you will know throughout the entire battlefield, you are hearing church music constantly. And speaking of church, you thought you could sleep in this Sunday, didn't you? Didn't you? But you thought you could skip church. Not in 40K. In 40K, you either come to church or church comes to you.
On wheels?
No.
Oh.
They will drop... If you skip church, the sisters will drop it from orbit on your front lawn. I'm not kidding. The sheer force of this thing landing is a weapon in and of itself, and it has these massive spires that reach towards the sky with braziers on top that ignite once they're in combat, gargoyles left, right, and center that open their jaws and start pouring out actual holy water at a torrential level. And as the sisters are leaving this facility, they're slaughtering everything around them, obviously, blasting church music and creating actual hallowed ground where they tread.
Jesus Christ.
They are not subtle in the least. And this, I know you're probably thinking, oh, this is like the local church near my house. No. No, this is, it can withstand assaults for days and even months. It is borderline a battle base. And that's not even the only church they can drop from orbit. They have titans with cathedrals built on them that just march in. Again, playing these church hymnals all the time.
Orbital dropped faith.
Yeah. Oh, you... the entire time you're battling with the sisters, they're on the ground and they're in the skies fighting like they have nothing to lose, all while taking a moment to ask you if you've heard about our Lord and Savior, the Emperor of Mankind.
Do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, the Emperor of Mankind?
They are devout. The highest honor to a sister is to die for the Emperor. There's nothing... Because if you think about it, it does show how devoted you are. Because, you know, everybody's willing to live. That's easy. The hard part's finding something you're willing to die for. And they found it.
They found it.
If the Space Marines are ice, the sisters are fire. You know, Ultramarines plan. The sisters believe in fate.
They just go, you know what? Mm-hmm. We'll drop in. Whatever happens, happens.
Well, it's not even whatever happens, happens. Because, and we'll get into this later. It's really easy to mock the sisters and think, oh, they're just zealots. This doesn't work. Until you see a greater demon hit a sister and they parry it. Through sheer faith. This shouldn't work. This thing towers over your average mortal. It should just... Like a knife through butter.
Do they just do the anime deflection of just like leaning over and then the punch just goes along the side of the blade?
No. They just swat it out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is
more like Breath of the Wild. You have a Lionel charging at you and you just go, no.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
It doesn't happen consistently, but it's happened enough for people to go, okay, maybe they're on something.
Okay, maybe they're on something. Yeah. Maybe they're doing something right.
Exactly. If the Space Marines fight with courage and honor, with the exception of the Night Lords, but I suppose the Night Lord fans would argue that skinning an orphanage to avoid a war is honorable. I'm not going to take the stand to defend that, but that's probably the opinion.
You can't make an omelet without skinning a couple orphans.
Exactly. But most fight with courage and honor. They fight with righteousness and fury while being completely normal people. This isn't like Space Marines where they're augmented. You know the whole spiel by now. My finest warriors clad...
They shall know no fear.
They shall know no fear. No. They get phenomenal gear. They do get really good gear and a frankly unlimited budget. I mean, think about it. They're dropping churches from space. I feel like in just stained glass costs alone, they're in the red.
Well, at this point, they probably got it down to a system.
But to be fair, I feel like it'd be almost like a work of art to see that massive church drop down. That glass just shatters everywhere immediately.
Unless it's like a...
It's the future, so who knows?
Reinforced with some sci-fi metal.
I wouldn't be surprised. But aside from the infinite budget and the amazing gear, that's all they get. They have no spare organs, no transhuman dread, just people trained to the most that you can push the human body with an unfaltering faith and resolve that what they do is in the name of an immortal. In fact, it's the immortal. Yeah, it's the all-seeing master of mankind, the Emperor.
My immortal.
Sure. They're devoutly committed to worshiping him in the same...
All of two people are going to get that reference.
Probably.
And you're not one of them.
Oh, 1,000,000%. They're devoutly committed to worshiping him, though it's clouded in the same thick fog of ignorance that the entire Imperium is currently clouded in. At the end of the day... Big E never wanted to be worshipped.
No, he was like devoutly atheistic, wasn't he? I mean, that's an oxymoron, but...
No, that's about right. He was devoutly atheistic. The problem is, the man cannot dodge the divine allegations. There's no lawyer on earth who could protect him from the divine allegations. Just in his time, just walking the earth and the stars, I suppose, he has... gotten complete mastery over pretty much any realm of human endeavor. I mean, the sheer gap between your average Joe and the Emperor is so high, even in a thumb war, you'd get blown out. He's created 20 sons that also share that same level of mastery, just focused down to make this weird family of borderline demigods. He's quite literally locked in as the eternal enemy for Chaos, which is their version of Satan in 40K.
He's Satan's Satan.
Basically, he has survived things that would not only stomp your average guy, but retcon them. You wouldn't exist anymore if half the things the Emperor was dealing with came your way. He runs around clad in bright golden armor with a halo above his head and a sword clad in flame.
And people, and he wants to say, please don't worship me.
And no, he doesn't even say things. When he's mad, he doesn't shout at you. Instead, he opts to mentally bombard you with what feels like a sandblasting. And him, just passively sitting on that life support machine for the last 10,000 years, puts out an obscenely bright light in the dark that can be used not only to navigate across the stars, but it births flaming angels that scour worlds for demons. And that's the guy telling you, hey, don't worship
me. Please don't worship me.
If anybody showed up tomorrow and did any one of those things, people would drop into their knees.
He'd have a church right below him in seconds.
Yeah, people like to give the sisters crap for worshiping the emperor because he didn't want it. But
he's doing a very terrible job of not wanting it.
That's what I'm saying. And that's before. That's just the stuff visible to your average Joe. Most of them don't even realize that he's either actually immortal, will reincarnate, could become a god after all this time, is an ancient weapon aping at being a human very badly, or he's 10 shaman in a trench coat. I can barely have the time to fathom that. Your average imperial peasant doesn't.
No.
It's not even close. For them, instead of dealing with that incomprehensible mess of paradoxes, they'd rather just think that there's somebody out there looking out for me.
I mean, to be fair, Occam's razor is a real philosophical concept.
Yeah. And,
most people are going to go, is this guy a collection of 10 shamans that, like, all collectively melded their consciousnesses into one psychic super being that's been around for 40,000 years? Or is this God? They're just going to say, this is God.
And these people are also stuck in the machinery of the Imperium. A brutal regime that will discard you the second you use it. So that sense of purpose, that protection, in a sense, whether it's real or not, and sisters do pull off miracles, so it's kind of real, it helps you not go fully hopeless. It will give you a sense of purpose, and while the sisters are awful, like everything else in 40K, it makes sense how they got here, given the hand they were dealt. The problem is the beginning of that hand was a lie. That the whole foundation, it's a trend. They've been lied to quite a few times, but twice in big important ways, and we're going to cover both of them. The first major lie is the religion is what I just covered. It's the religion is devoutly based on worshiping somebody who didn't want worship.
Somebody repeatedly said, I'm not God. Stop it.
But the worst part of that is the person who wrote the book that they ascribe to, their version of like the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, their holy text, is their version of the biggest traitor. It's like if you opened the Bible tomorrow and you found a foreword signed by Judas Iscariot. It's that level of treachery. The person who wrote that, Lorgar, is basically, he was the first of his sons to fall to chaos and start this whole thing. It's one of those facts that very few people know because the heresy was a while ago. So not many people are even alive to remember it. But B, I don't care who you are. If you go out and say, oh yeah, Judas wrote your good book, you're getting burned as a heretic. There's pretty much nobody, save for the emperor and maybe his sons, who could come out and say that and not be burned on the spot. And even his sons, who are walking around right now in the Imperium, don't mention it. Because they realize if they do this, oh, it all implodes. Oh, this all implodes.
Yeah, it'll just be like it'll be just a social nightmare.
Yeah.
Like the ecclesiarchy will just like collectively all just like freak out.
Or worse.
Or worse.
Or worse. Lorgar had always been a fairly religious person. That's just the way he was. And he was always seeking meaning. So when the emperor showed up and did the whole appearing divine and everything but name shtick, Lorgar was like, oh, this is fantastic. God is real. I need to make sure everybody knows about this. That's why his legion are called the Word Bearers. They bear the word. He immediately started spreading this religion. I use that term loosely because it was still in R&D at the time, to every world that he conquered, planting the seeds of the modern day worship we see. Remember though, The Emperor is violently atheist. He's not. He's violently atheist. So when he figured out that Lorgar was spreading effectively fan fiction about him, and it was gripping quite a few people, it was giving them hope, he decided to summon Lorgar to his homeworld. It was a ruse. Like, hey, let's check out
Hey, kiddo, what you doing?
Yeah, and the second he arrived, he forced Lorgar to kneel using his psychic might and watch as his brothers ransacked his home, burned it all to the ground before the Emperor mentally shouted, not just to Lorgar, but to his entire legion of followers, "You are my biggest failures. Learn from this," and then leaves. Yeah.
And we wonder why Lorgar has daddy issues.
Oh, yes. After that, suffice it to say, he became a broken person. And that level of dejection is the perfect breeding ground for chaos to swoop in and get a brand new primetime preacher. So that's what Lorgar went to do as a side hustle. That's where he kind of disappears from the plot for a little bit. Eventually, this is a really fun one, Lorgar does come back and he discovers his book has become a New York Times bestseller. It's become quite the hit. And he does not take this well. Lorgar tries to convince them that, hey, I'm the name on that book. I wrote this.
I wrote this. Look, I signed it right there.
Yeah, exactly. And he tried to tell them, like, hey, you guys are worshiping not a god, but a man who does not want worship at all. To which he said, see, that's the trick right there. No god would come to us and tell him to worship him. We have to be true enough believers to worship him despite what he says. And they say, quote, only the faithful know his true nature, for only a true god would deny his divinity. They quote Lorgar's book at him.
Oh.
Hearing this, he flies completely off the handle and says that, yes, I wrote that book, and looking back, it was nothing but a delusion and a lie. Every single page is full of speculation. And they respond, see, that's even more proof, because if the Emperor can do his work through absolute gutter trash enemies like you, then he has to be divine. And Lorgar's next response is sundering gunfire. Not another word is exchanged, basically. He massacres them where they stand and declares these idiot fanatics, who will be a massive problem if they're allowed to grow, just like the Emperor did to him. It's a full circle, baby.
Like father, like son.
Oh, what? This dawned on him? And he wasn't happy before. He was angry squared now.
It's funny you say angry squared, because he just seems to be a chip off the old block.
Now Lorgar is stuck, having to dedicate his entire life to destroy what he created, and genuinely, it was a passion project for him. This was a book he wrote in his spare time because he genuinely believed in it, and now he has to deal with people willing to die for the Emperor, despite being living proof that his dream no longer exists. It's what the Emperor tried to destroy in Lorgar, and they in turn will be the ruin towards everything the Emperor is building. But he also just can't leave him be, because he'll become a massive threat to chaos. So Lorgar is now stuck untwisting this paradox and waging war against his own brainchild forever. And it's not just, oh great, I created this religion. It's a problem. It's become an institution of zealots who shout my quotes at me like I'm wrong.
I'm the author telling you to separate the art from the author.
You can't fathom how angry Lorgar is at this. He tells a scribe all of this to record it, and then he just asks, "Hey, are you done recording that?" And the scribe goes, "Yeah." And Lorgar just chokes him out, and then proceeds to say, "I will extinguish all the life from this universe, and then, and only then, will I think about this paradox again." That's the guy who wrote the book the sisters are worshiping.
He's very pissed at this.
I would saw an arm off to see a book where he just encounters a drop church. Just one. I just need to see his reaction to a single drop church.
I think he might. I think he might have an aneurysm and keel over at that.
No, no, no.
He'd have to have Chaos revive him.
Which they would do. They really like Lorgar. He's a great spokesperson. He's a fan. He's their Billy Mays. He's their ShamWow guy. I don't remember his name, but that guy. Yeah. That. Yeah. But that's the first really big lie. There's a second one, and it's not worse, but not great. And it comes from a guy named Goj Vandyre.
That's a silly name. And that's coming from somebody who reads Dune. Goj Vandyre?
Yeah, Goj Vandyre.
That's a silly name.
He deserves an episode all to himself. I'm not joking. This is heresy levels of long writing. I'm going to crunch down all of it. Very aggressively. The Imperium is a massive empire, and they have the ability to fight everyone, everywhere, all at once, and they do, successfully-ish. They don't lose, which is impressive in and of itself. Sometimes they're even fighting themselves, and they're still not quite losing. It's massive, and ruling over this entire system requires actual armies of accountants, bureaucrats, politicians, and usually somebody superhuman at the top of all of it, just to stay sane. Goj Vandyre was just a guy.
Just a man.
He was just a man, and a terrible one at that. And a terrible one at that. He was completely brutal and conniving. Just think your least favorite despot. Turn so high the dial falls off. That's who Goj Vandyre was. And if you think about how big the Imperium was, think about the level of backstabbing, treachery, and politicking you need to play to wind up in charge of it. That's the game that Goj played. And not only did he wind up on top of the beast that is the Imperium, he wound up taking over the church too, giving him pretty much unquestionable authority. Nobody could stop him.
He was the one British king who's just like, hey, I want to... Which one was it who, like, made the Church of England just so he could have his own church, so he could, like, have more control over the people?
I'm not sure.
One of them did that.
There's a long list of eccentric royals, and one somebody will leave that. It in the comments. I'm sure of that. He is a fantastic, albeit ridiculous, case study into why power is split up, because if you have it all under one guy, it's fantastic. It's great. You can pivot really quickly. You can adapt to anything thrown at you far faster than with an army of bureaucrats. However, it only takes one nutcase for it all to crash. Think Nero fiddling while Rome burned. It's that level of insanity, and it's all very high concept. Let's get back to the man with the most evil name. Goj Vandyre was the Imperium's Nero, with nothing standing in his way and complete control over the most powerful government man had ever assembled at the time. He proceeded to bring agony to everyone across the Imperium. Well, more agony.
More agony.
Than it's usual.
It's already a pretty agonizing place.
To give a sense of scale, Horus splitting the Empire in half and treating the Emperor like Bane treated Batman is simply called the Horus Heresy.
Or the Horusy, oh, for God. Distinguished individuals.
Goj Vandyre's rule is called the Reign of Blood. And he took control during the Age of Apostasy.
So this is the bad times.
Obviously, the heresy was worse. Obviously, but dang, does it show how badly he treated your average man? For it to be remembered as the Reign of Blood during the Age of Apostasy.
This was the really bad, unfun times.
It shows you just how badly your average Joe was suffering. Part of the suffering is because, as I said, Goj is just a man, and he's a man who stepped on a lot of people to get to where he is. If you take that and you add the stresses of ruling, because heavy is the head that wears a crown, but multiply that crown by millions upon millions of worlds, always fighting all the time. And he becomes a complete nutcase. He completely goes stark raving mad. And what's worse is he is mortal. He ages. And mental clarity is not known to go up as you go up in years.
It's like, have you ever looked at any president ever after their term? They go from, like, decent looking to gray.
They gray immediately, yeah.
Like, look at pictures of Obama in 2008 and then again in 2012.
Pretty much every president grays in office. It's just the nature of the office. I'm fairly certain Bush grayed the second that Secret Service agent whispered in his ear. I'm positive he woke up gray the next day. There's no shot.
The Imperium is like 10 trillion U.S.'s. Imagine the toll that takes on you.
Yeah, Goj Vandar went stark raving mad, and it was so bad that loyal space marines decided, okay. We don't care about politics, usually. We don't. That's their realm, whatever. They can do whatever the hell they want.
We're weapons of war.
This guy is actually insane, so we're going to siege Terra to get rid of him. Yeah, loyal space marines sieged Terra to try and get rid of him.
They thought the siege of Terra was so good that they wanted a second one?
Basically. And I'll be honest, they were expecting a very quick and clean fight because it's space marines. The exact strategy was land from orbit, move forward, get Goj, move backwards. That was the entire strategy.
It didn't work too well, did it?
Nope. They wound up getting caught in a long, drawn-out siege.
It's Terra.
No, it wasn't actually. The problem wasn't Terra. Their plan was sound. They're still weapons of war. They would have won against your normal man any day of the week. The problem was there's a certain group of warrior women who are clad in some absurd gear and were so fanatic it gave Space Marines pause. They were willing to die. They were. It was a lot. Space Marines did not expect them to fight with that kind of fervor, and it ground them to a halt. This is where we bring back the sisters. See, during his descent into madness, again, we're compressing so much here. Vandire had heard of this world with a covenant of holy sisters who were calling themselves the Daughters of the Emperor. These were highly devout, all-female group that was on a fairly backwards planet. But regardless, Vandire arrived and decided to make a show of it by ensuring that everybody gave him a warm welcome, and he recorded it for all to see. We're going to ignore the fact that there were guns pointed right off screen. So if you didn't smile and wave, it wasn't going to end well for you. And so he goes up and he talks to them, and at first they don't let him in. They only answer to one man, the Emperor of Mankind. But Goj convinces them to come in, and he has one of his guards shoot him to prove that he's divine. It's a long story. Basically, he has like a pocket shield generator hidden in a Rosarius, but this is a backwards planet. They've never seen anything like that. And Goj kept this a secret, even from his guard. So they fully expected this guy to be shot and died, but instead a bright flash happened and he was fine.
And then I assumed that the backwards planet people were just like, oh my god, wait, whoa, he is divine.
That's exactly what the Daughters of the Emperor did at the time, and he rebranded them to the Brides of the Emperor. Terrible names.
This is a terrible name. I don't like the insinuation of them going from the daughters to the brides of them.
Yeah, Emperor. They're very gross names, but c'est la vie. Under Vandire, they got a basically unlimited budget, and it's the same budget that they carry today that lets them have all the stuff that they have, and they were upgraded into an elite strike force that would do his bidding and his bidding alone as the mouth of the Emperor. Think Gaddafi's Amazonians. That's the vibe he was running with them. It was this force that was stopping the Marines in their tracks, and it was so bad that the Emperor's version of the Secret Service, the Custodes, had to come out and get involved. Because even they were like, oh.
Well, what are we doing here?
Exactly. And they went to go try and talk these ladies off the cliff because they're the main problem here. And the response was to fight the Captain General of the Custodes for actual hours. Now, I'm just gonna interject here real quick. In my mind, there is no shot that a normal person fought a Custodes for hours. I'm fairly certain, because he's the Captain General of the Custodes, he just did the quick math and saw, well, if I just one-shot them, they'll think they got martyred.
And then they'll swarm me, and then I'll have a situation of like...
No, he could have gotten all of them without any problems, but the problem is that wouldn't have ended the fighting. Mm. They would have been revered even more.
It would have just been more
bloodshed. Exactly. So I'm fairly certain it was one of those where he's just ducking and dodging for about an hour straight. Just, can we talk, please? But there's no direct accounts. So take that with a grain of salt. That's just my opinion. I like the concept of a custodian just constantly juking and jiving for like an hour straight.
She kept slipping past his olive oiled biceps.
Oh, God. Yeah. And that again, just my thing. If you like the concept of a sister killing the custodians, go for it. It's all you. But it was clear to even the custodians, we can't talk them off this cliff. Because they genuinely believe that Vandyre is divine and the mouth of the Emperor. So we're going to go take you to see the actual mouth of the Emperor. And they let those, not all of them, six of them specifically, into the Emperor's throne room where nobody had been basically for the last thousands of years. We don't know what happened in there. The only person who knows is the Emperor, the custodians, and those women who went in. That's it. But what we do know is they came out with stark white hair and such thinly veiled fury. Such thinly veiled fury directed squarely at Vandyre for lying to them. They marched right to his quarters, dragged him out in front of all the other sisters, declared him a heretic of the highest order, and then proceeded to do what the French did to their monarchy during that one revolution, and what Henry VIII did to wife number 2 and 5, I believe.
That was the one.
Henry VIII?
I'm pretty sure he's the one.
Mm, probably. The guy had problems. They had problems.
Yeah.
But despite such a public way of going out, Vandyre actually has, he's a terrible person, but he has one of the best last words I've ever heard, which is, he's confused. Like I said, he's befuddled and he's insane. Like,
how did this happen?
No, not that. Mentally. He's just not there.
Oh, I see.
He's
like full on Nero.
Yeah. No, he was issuing contradictory orders. It was suffering on a mass scale, not even on purpose.
There was a horse in the Senate somehow.
I wouldn't be surprised. So he didn't even fathom fully what was going on, but all he said is he looked up and went, "Huh? What? I'm too busy to die." he literally said, "What? I don't have the time to die." That's it. Before he lost his head. Yeah. It's so good.
Honestly, that's a mood right there. I'm too busy to die.
I have other stuff to get to.
Yeah. I don't have time to die. That's not on this schedule.
And it's then that the sisters finally got their name. It's the Adeptus Sororitas, but that's a whole thing. And I remember when I was first getting into this, there's a lot of Adepta X and Adepta Y. Custodes. So I'm just going to call them the Sisters of Battle. We're just going to lump it all together.
And I'm going to call them the Nuns with Guns.
I was going to go the whole episode without saying that too. Oh, okay. Anyway, that is that entire saga compressed into a chunk. And that is its own episode someday, unless you're watching for the future, in which case the link will be in the description to that episode. Speaking of links in the description, there is one right now, actually, that will give you an extra episode every single week. I see you guys in the comments constantly asking for more episodes. I see you guys binging all the stuff and then re-binging all the stuff. There's another back catalog only on Patreon. Every week we upload 2 episodes and we've been uploading them since we started. So you can get double what you've already watched.
Oh, there's almost double there already.
Just by going over to patreon.com/IsanderandCoda. Not only do you do your part and help us keep producing this amazing show, but you get access to the Discord and a bunch of other cool perks and features. For those of you already there, thank you very much. And for those of you joining as I speak, thank you as well. Also, we are down to the wire. There's only 2 choices left, and it's the Assassinorum and the Inquisition. And I didn't think it'd be this close at all. I really didn't.
I've seen some of the polls. It's very close.
It's so close, I may need to do a recount on Patreon as well. But the moral of the story is, 2 men enter, 1 man leaves, and I have no control over that. That's all you guys. So if you want it to be seen, make sure your voice is heard in the comments, and let the best fandom win. Again, I'll be honest, I didn't expect the Assassinorum to have the Inquisition on the ropes. I really didn't see that coming. Usually I can safely gauge how these are going to go. That one surprised me. Now, so I suppose Inquisition fans, do your work. Step it up. Innocence proves nothing, so go out there. Prove nothing.
I don't know. I like the Assassinorum. I love me some edgy stealth guys.
Fair enough. They're really cool.
Especially with the skulls on their head. That's pretty cool.
That's a whole thing. That's a whole thing. But that's a topic for the future. Let's get back to the heavyweight champs this week, the Sisters of Battle. Now that they have their name, after that brief stint of helping just the worst people, they began to split into various orders. And key thing of note here, most sister stories and models you see are going to be the battle ones, because it's called wargaming.
It's wargaming. It's going to be the war characters.
Exactly. They're the ones who do the mutant, the heretic. That's their shtick. However, they have quite a bit of non-combat roles. They do a lot just around the Imperium to help out. And a more fitting name for them would have honestly been the Salvation Army. But, like, I guess some company beat GW to that.
Yeah.
I'm still going to use it to describe their two branches because it's so straightforward. There's Salvation and there's an army. You can guess which does what. For the Salvation side, they do a ton of things. There's a lot of smaller orders here and there that do everything, you know. They have triages that tend to the wounded, and they have a bunch of medics that are actually very well trained. They're usually attached to guard regiments at the hip, just because the guards are always getting hurt.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, there's so many of them.
Yeah, so that's what they spend a lot of their time doing, but they also do study alien languages, as well as old dead languages, like, for example, people studying Latin today. Nobody's really speaking Latin, but there's still value in studying it because there's all kinds of written works we can't study without that. So it's the same thing for them. They study alien languages and old dead languages because, hey, they may have seen that golden guy once, and we want to know about that. That's really it.
Hey, Tyranids, have you seen that golden guy?
Pretty much. And then they also have a group that, I'm going to try here for you, so I'm going to need you to give me credit here. I've started to scratch my way into Doom, but they have sub-orders that behave like the Bene Gesserit without the weird martial arts that they do. So they play a lot of political games and intrigue, and they also just kind of keep tabs on wherever the living saints decide to pop up. They do what the Bene Gesserit do.
That's a classic Bene Gesserit type beat.
Yeah, and put a pin in the Living Saints. We'll get to them later. But it all sounds fantastic. It all sounds great. It is still 40K. Nobody can be good all the time. So their doctors are also used to keep torture victims alive. Because they didn't hear about do no harm, I guess.
You would need to, if you haven't gotten the information out of the guy, and he's that close.
Yeah.
Get him back. We still need that information.
The people who study alien languages and dead languages are used by the Inquisition to interrogate people they can't understand. If they capture a Xenon, they call them. Every coin has its way worse side in 40K. Nobody does good all the time. However, most people do still like the sisters. The common man does anyway, because they're there for you. You know, like if you're a guardsman and you see a space marine, it's all... First of all, it means things are going terribly, because you shouldn't see a space marine in theory. But if you do see one, A, God, that's weird and frightening, and B, it's like seeing a celebrity. It's jarring to you.
Yeah.
In one of the space marine trailers, you can see it. The guardsmen go slack-jawed when they just see a space marine walking by them. The sisters are a lot more to their level. There's no transhuman dread, and they really seem to care about your average guy. Genuinely, the sisters will try their best to protect people they see as serving the Emperor. Space Marines know they cost a lot of resources, so they'll leave. It's rare, and again, they don't know fear, so it's never out of cowardice. It's more cold, calculating, we can't win this.
It's just like the
my death would be wasted here, let's move it along.
There's money it costs to make another one of me?
It's not worth it.
Just keep me around, and you don't need another me.
Why would I need to die when you have Joe 1 through 10 million to die? Let them do it. And they're not wrong. Space Marines are a long and arduous process that most people don't survive. You don't want them falling left, right, and center. However, guards,
They're disguised.
They're made at such a high rate, the guns and clothes they wear are worth more than their lives. So, of course, they're going to gravitate towards the sisters because the sisters actually care. They'll sacrifice themselves. Space Marines.
Space Marines are like, nah, yeah. See ya.
Yeah. But now let's move on from Salvation to the army side of things. There are 6 orders, all with some amazing names, and all originally founded by one of those 6 ladies who got to see the Emperor. We'll start and we'll focus mostly on the poster children for the sisters. These are the ones you're going to see in most of the art. They're called the Order of Our Martyred Lady. They are led, or were, led by Catherine, one of those 6 sisters, and she was a force to be reckoned with in her time. They actually used to be called the Fiery Hearts back in the day because of the ferocity she brought onto the battlefield. She accomplished so much that in her lifespan, she was declared a living saint. We're going to take that pin off the board now. Because
that was fast.
Well, I didn't... The living saints deserve their own chunk, but I didn't want to just jam it in there because they're more... You mostly see them in combat. But living saints are somebody who has done so much in the Emperor's name so devoutly that he sees fit to bless you with the ability to behave an awful lot like a demon. An awful lot like a demon. But for the Emperor, some of them sprout angelic wings. Some of them just don't die. They start firing wave after wave of holy fire. It's the most, don't worship me, teehee, as I create actual angels before your very eyes. It's a whole thing. But to be one, it takes a level of devotion far above and beyond. I actually really like the sisters because it does a good job of showing how meaningless things can be sometimes, because you will see stories of sisters sacrificing everything, pushing up until the very bitter end, and they get maybe 1-2 miracles. It takes a lot to be a living saint. It's not like Big E's just generating these left, right, and center. There's very few of them. Sure, like I said, a sister in combat will be singing hymns for the Emperor, and they will magically not miss 10 rounds in a row at absurd range, but it's not like all of them are firing hellfire left, right, and center. It's a select few, basically the best of the best. And Catherine became one of those living saints, but in something quite jarring for a living saint to do, she stopped living.
Oh.
She was killed by a bunch of cultists, and it was for good. She was martyred, and pretty much all of the original 6 got martyred in one way or another. That's just the way they went. It's part of why they became such legends, because when you martyr somebody, you amplify them. But that, my dear friends, is where we end for this week, because sister fans are going to be eating good. They're getting 2 episodes.
You mean 2 episodes?
Because I didn't want to skip these 6 gals and their various orders, because they're so cool and they're all so different. There's one, for example, who believes in faith through work. That's what they believe in. Faith is shown through works, it's shown through deeds, not words. So they will just be dead silent in combat and get it done every time.
Call them the Sisters of Silence.
There are other ones who deglove their hands to feel something. It's not to feel something. There's a lot more to it than that.
But
yes, there's a lot of different orders, and there's a lot of those 6 sisters accomplished a lot, and they're all legends in their own right. So I want to cover them next week. You're going to be getting an episode of that. On top of all the absurd things they bring into combat, like the penitent engines, the arcoflagellants, and the triumph of St. Catherine, which is the actual funeral procession for that martyred St. Catherine I mentioned earlier. And we'll also cover the other living saints, including the most famous one, the one beloved by all, St. Celestine. She's done a lot.
I've heard her name before.
She's the most famous one for appearing when the Imperium needs her the most. And it's so funny whenever Saint Celestine is in combat and something important happens, because she'll just declare everyone a martyr, whether you're alive or not. When Gilliman was resurrected, the second she saw him catch breath, she was reinvigorated. Her wings sprouted back out, and everyone, literally everybody around her, started fighting far harder because they knew if they died, they were martyrs now. For a fact, this is a historical moment. Fight with all you have for the Emperor. She's so cool. She also has these two canonesses who will live, die, repeat for her over and over and over again. It's, this is stuff I couldn't compress because it's all so cool. They also kind of behave like orcs. We'll touch on that next episode. Like I said, sisters pull off stuff that shouldn't work. Like, sisters will be, there's a story of this one relatively new sister whose entire cohort is being just decimated before her very eyes. I'm not joking. A greater demon sets a good chunk of them on fire, then slows time so they feel it for longer.
God.
And you want to know why the sisters are so cool? Instead of screaming in agony or running around like chickens with their heads cut off, they simply ask this new recruit to sing because they loved her voice that much and she was that good. Yeah. They were fighting tooth and nail, and instead of issuing orders, move left, right, and center, they're like, sing for the Emperor, because that's what matters now. It's in that battle, like, a sister casually deflects a blow from that greater demon once. The second time, she doesn't.
It's impressive that she does it once.
Yeah. It's so... They just... Every time you think you have a sister on the ropes, you really don't. Unless you do. That's kind of how it works. There's too much, and I wanted to do it all justice, and you sister fans showed up. So you will be getting two episodes. You'll be living lavish. You'll be living lavish. And so, also, we'll be covering their beef with Space Marines.
They have beef with Space Marines? Well, I assume it has to do with past events that we just went over.
Kind of, and also because... I'm not going to say this with chest. I've not done enough research to say this with chest. I will say not... I might get in trouble for this. Let me cook. That's how we're going to take this.
Let him cook.
No sister has ever fallen to chaos, and then it was recorded. So that means either none has ever fallen to chaos, which is possible. Custodes have never done it.
Where one fell to chaos and the other ones were just like, nobody can hear of this.
Pretty much.
And then gave them the old Yeller treatment.
That's exactly what happened. They also have the Holy Trinity of the Bolter, the Flamer, the Melta. Oh, yeah. The sisters are so cool. They're so cool.
The Holy Trinity of the guns.
Well, the gun, the flamethrower, and the laser lance. Jeez. It's so cool. Every time you think the sisters have gone overboard... No, they haven't. Hold on, I'm crying a little bit. It brings a tear to my eye. No, it's...
The Emperor hath blessed you.
Oh, he has. Yes, he has. And so they will be... All that will be in the next episode. And for now, the names you may have already been seeing scrolling by in a new format. And if you haven't, for our audio listeners, we still appreciate you, is the new... News ticker format.
We're trying something new, so it's gonna go for a while. We tested it with a Patreon video, and it goes on for a while.
Well, that's a good thing. We're actually the Legion's no longer Codex compliant, is what somebody said.
That was one of the jokes I heard the Patreon or the Discord rather.
Yes, it's fantastic. So, no fracot today. But before we head out today, I do need to thank two of our fantastic fans. One being Jerry for the brand new Ultra Mug that you will now be seeing in pretty much every episode at some point. That's right. The jar era is over, which was...
Sad to see them go, but...
I'm surprised it wasn't as... I thought it was... Drinking out of mason jars was way more common. A lot of people don't do that. So that is the new mason jar replacement. It is now the Ultra Mug, and thank you to Jerry for that. And I mentioned this several episodes ago in the Guard video, but we now own the Imperial Infantryman's Handbook. So you'll be getting an episode on this at some point. And I have to read the note that was sent to this because it was fantastic. A fan had a spare and they were kind enough to send it our way. And so I have to give a shout out to Matt. He sent, it's both Munitorum Manual and the Uplifting Primer. So it's combined and it's got a warning on the first page. It, again, this book is taken so literally. It's this could have fallen out of the 41st millennium. I said
honestly,
that.
Honestly, it looks like it could. Like, it's even, like, the right size where it's I would, that could just be shoved into, like, a bag.
Yeah, and you would carry that everywhere.
And you'd carry that everywhere.
Yeah. It's even got a note in the very beginning that says, discard your old ones. This is the most updated version. It's so good. He took the time to also calculate the book's journey to us. And from printing to here today, it traveled 33,500 kilometers, or, for those of you that don't know, what the fuck is a kilometer?
What is a kilometer?
No. Or almost 21,000 miles, for those of you who don't use metric. Started in Nottingham, UK, to Sydney, Australia, to Perth, back to Sydney, then over here to the Pacific Northwest. And apparently, Australian postage is draconian.
Oh yeah,
apparently.
I've been a fan of a couple Australian YouTubers for a couple of years. One that I will absolutely, just unashamedly, like, represent, Dank Pods. He does like weird stuff with iPods. Anyway, he'll like ship like iPods in and out of Australia, and I guess they just get ripped into by the post security.
I suppose it did take a while to get to us. So.
Yeah, it did.
He did include with it the litany, the litany of warp travel, which is shield me from the maelstrom, prove the ship worthy of protecting your legions who bring light to wherever they travel. And all I can say is your prayers worked, Matt. They arrived. So thank you very much to both Matt and Jerry. If you would like to send us stuff, there should be a PO box linked in the description as well. Just shoot us an email letting us know, hey, X is coming. By why, and we'll be able to open it up. Thank you all so much for being you, and thank you guys so much. In every episode, I've kind of set a goal for us. In the last ones, it was 50,000, which we are rapidly approaching. We've completely shattered 40,000.
This is the first goal that we've reached, or this is the first goal that we haven't reached in a single week.
Well, that's not true. In the beginning, we didn't. But regardless, thank you guys for all the support. I'm not going to lie. I genuinely considered buying a Warhammer and carving in like 40,000 names before the logistics of that just became a nightmare. I still might carve that in, but I have to MacGyver that somehow. Thank you, really. I do appreciate it. None of this is possible without you. And thank you all so much for being you.
And we will thank see you for making us the Warhammer 40,000.
We'll see you on Wednesday for the Patreon episode and Saturday for Sisters Part Dos. The Inquisition has a chance. That's all I'm saying. I'm obviously a fair and impartial judge. But how's the Inquisition going to lose to one of the hardest things to spell?
But I just want my edgy assassin guys.
I
mean,
I can
guys.
Spell it, obviously, but that's a comment I keep seeing over and over again. I think I'm spelling this, right? Assassinorum? All I'm saying is, you guys are talking a lot of game. Innocence proves nothing, all that. I'm not seeing it.
I just want to see my edgy assassin guys.
I mean, they may still happen. We'll see.
Honestly, they just look like edgy or Solid Snake.
They have 2 weeks, so we will see who wins that last spot. Fight for it tooth and nail. We'll see you then.